From the Moan Broadcast Centre at KPCC, this is The Frame. I'm Chloe Veltman, filling in for John Horn. Happy Friday, everyone. On today's show, more than 200 Latino cultural figures are making their feelings known about recent events in the United States. Then, Ben Stiller ditches comedies to direct the real-life prison break story, Escape at Dannemora.
This is about three people who did pretty bad things and really didn't get redeemed in any way and shouldn't necessarily be redeemed. And so, you know, what is it that's going to keep people watching? And to me, it was about the humanity and what we could see in ourselves in this story.
That's coming up on The Frame. Stay tuned. Prominent Latino members of the entertainment industry came together today to sign an open letter responding to recent events in the United States.
You look at what's marching up, that's an invasion. That's an invasion.
The posting spoke of a, quote, Hispanic invasion of the U.S.
Immigration and Customs Enforcement handcuffed hundreds of immigrant workers and loaded them onto buses as co-workers and family members watched in disbelief.
Among the signatories are actresses Eva Longoria and America Ferrera, as well as our first guest on today's show, Gloria Calderon-Kellett. She's the showrunner and co-creator of the series One Day at a Time. She told me the letter is an act of solidarity that she hopes will provide a glimmer of hope in these challenging times.
We all are feeling this heaviness in this moment that we've all been talking about with one another. And I think that the women came together and said, you know, maybe there's an opportunity here in this darkness to provide a flicker of light to our communities out there and let them know that we see them and that we on this side are going to be fighting for them with whatever voice we have and let them know that there is light.
What's your personal reason for signing on?
I feel like the Latinx community is under attack by this administration and is very othered in this moment. And we see it. We see it with these concentration camps at the borders. We see it with children being taken away from their parents. You know, the story is that these are dangerous people coming in their caravans. And it's just a narrative that's incorrect. These are people that are struggling in their home countries, like everybody in America, and are looking to go somewhere else to find shelter and home. These are asylum-seeking people. This is just suddenly a narrative that is really hurting our community and I think leading to violence, as we are seeing with all of these attacks that are happening. The gun violence that we just saw in El Paso was targeted towards Mexicans. That is all because of this negative narrative that's out there and this rhetoric that's out there. And we really want to put a stop to it and put a different face on that for people that don't know our community.
Well, turning to the shooting in El Paso, where Mexicans were the specific target, how can Latino artists and the media interrupt racist ideologies or provide comfort to those targeted?
I think this kind of thing is the way to do it. And then also, you know, we are all on shows where we are trying to really cover this narrative. We're really trying to cover how our community is affected. I know Superstore, America's show, Superstore on NBC just did a story about one of their employees being targeted by ICE and taken away. Season one of One Day at a Time, we did an episode about immigration. Jane the Virgin did an episode about it. So we're all trying to do our part in terms of shifting culture and talking about this thing. But it's a really dire time. And it's also very interesting because we are under this umbrella. You know, there's 20 countries under this umbrella of Latinidad. And if I was in that store, that guy would have shot me because nobody knows who is what. And so we all need to really come together and stand together and not make this. We are all very proud of our own rich culture. We all want, you know, Latinos like to tell you, like, I'm Cuban, I'm Colombian. We're very proud of the differences. But there's so much in common. And certainly one of those things is a moment like this where we can come together and say, Any negative hit towards one in our community is a hit against all of us.
I'm chatting with TV producer Gloria Calderon-Kellett. Gloria, LA Times reporter Carolina Miranda, just wrote an article about why the Latino culture vacuum is dangerous. She talks about a lack of Latino representation across media and pop culture, and she talks about it in even more urgent terms. Do you agree that a lack of diversity in media could possibly fuel violent sentiments?
Absolutely. Because right now we're 18% of the population roughly, and still only about 5 to 6% of what is seen on television. And of those 5 to 6%, we are still very marginalized. It's the fifth lead. roles tend to still be very stereotyped, gangbangers, drug dealers, that sort of thing. So when that is all that is being put out there, when that is the only story that people in that maybe have never met a Latino person see, then of course that's fueling this violence. That's fueling this thought of, oh my gosh, these people are scary and dangerous. And that's just not who we know ourselves to be. There is an entire portion of us that are other than that. And we would also like to be seen. It's so important. I mean, with One Day at a Time, the amount of people, when they come to us after the shows, they are crying. They are like, I can't believe I just saw a mom on TV just being a mom. Because that's me and I've never gotten to see that. I can't believe I'm seeing a veteran Latina on TV positively talking about her life and how she was a veteran for this country and now she's struggling with PTS and doing things about it. A normal human person. So it's vital. It's vital that we see those things and that other people see those things and invite us into their living rooms and see that we are so much more alike than we are different.
Carolina Miranda's commentary talks about how tough it is to get funding and greenlit for stories featuring Latinos. How does that match with your experience as a content creator?
It's true. It's true. It's still difficult. You're hearing the story out there, we want this, we want this. But every year, I mean, this is not a scientific study, but roughly based on the people I know, it seems like around 11 pilots were by Latino creators about a Latinx experience were purchased last year of hundreds. So when none of those shows got picked up, because none of them did for this season, you're like, well, if they want more, then they should buy 50. They should buy 100 in order to allow one to come through if it is really important to them. If that type of inclusivity is truly important, they need to be buying more and they need to be really putting their money where their mouth is.
Gloria Calderon-Kellett is the showrunner and co-creator of One Day at a Time. And along with other prominent Latino members of the entertainment industry, she signed an open letter to the Latinx community today. The letter responds to current immigration policies and the shooting in El Paso. Thank you so much for joining me today. It's been lovely chatting with you.
Thank you. Same.
The next season of One Day at a Time will be on the Pop TV cable channel. Coming up on The Frame, Ben Stiller had directed several movies and TV projects, but never anything as grim as Escape at Dannemora. Ben Stiller has directed a lot of movies and TV shows, but never anything as grim as Escape at Dannemora. The Showtime series tells the true story of two dangerous men who in 2015 broke out of a state prison in upstate New York. The prisoners are played by Benicio del Toro and Paul Dano. They were aided by a prison worker who's played by Patricia Arquette. All three have Emmy nominations, as does the series itself, and Stiller too for his directing. John Horn recently spoke with Ben Stiller, and here's their conversation.
I want you to think back to when it actually happened.
George Ballet here. We're cutting into regular programming because of last night's prison break in Dannemora. Governor Andrew Cuomo has arrived in the North Country and is at the prison right now. These two inmates have been identified as 48-year-old Richard Matt, 34-year-old David Sweat.
These are two dangerous individuals. First order of business is to find the two individuals and return them to prison.
Do you have a specific recollection of hearing about the escape, or did it come to you later?
I was actually in Italy filming Zoolander 2 when it happened.
It wasn't really in the headlines.
Yeah, I was focused on that, and it didn't make the Italian headlines. You know, I heard a little bit something about it, but when I came back, it was when they sent me the script. Michael Tolkien and Brett Johnson sent me the script that they had written a few months after it happened. That's when I really first heard about it.
I would say this story and Zoolander 2 exist in that they're both actors saying lines and then people sit and watch them.
That you watch on a screen.
Exactly. Yeah.
I didn't say yes to it at first because I didn't really know enough about what had happened. And at that point, there wasn't that much information about what had really happened. And I didn't want to make it up. Because as an audience, I'd want to watch it. But in terms of directing something like this, I knew that for me, the connection was what really happened. How does something like this happen in this day and age? And I wanted to just sort of cling on to the facts.
So in June of 2016, Catherine Lay Scott, the Inspector General for the State of New York, releases this report And it reads like a novel. It is like a Michael Connelly novel. I mean, some great crime writer. It's unbelievable. And it's got so many great little details in it. So when this comes out, does this change your thinking? Does it change the whole nature of the script?
Yeah, well, it actually was the reason that I came back and said I wanted to do it when it came out, because that was at that point I'd said I don't think I can do it because I don't know how to make this up. I didn't feel confident enough in doing that. So then when the report came out, I immediately emailed with Brett and Michael because they saw it too. It was in the New York Times. It just came out. You could just click on the PDF. And it was just, you know, fascinating, and it was so detail-oriented that I thought, okay, this is the source material, and if we want to start from scratch with all these real details, which are much more interesting than anyone could make up, then let's do it.
It's more interesting and more unbelievable than anything anybody could make up. There's stuff smuggled in frozen hunks of meat. There are these little things about what is permitted, how things happen. I mean, the chronology of every little thing that happened, I think if you wrote it in a screenplay, you'd get a studio executive who's like, there's no way.
Yeah, a lot of it just seemed kind of made up or almost like, oh, that would be in a movie or that would be too, you know, cheesy or corny to be in a movie. And that the fact that it was real was what was so fascinating to me. And then it made me want to learn more about the culture at the prison that allowed this kind of thing to happen.
So when you start thinking about the culture of the prison and about the people who are going to help tell this story, pretty quickly, Joyce Mitchell emerges as a key character in the Inspector General's report. So for people who haven't watched, who is Joyce Mitchell and why is she such an important path into telling this tale?
She was a civilian worker at the prison who was a civilian supervisor in the tailor shop. So in this prison, Clinton Correctional, which is a New York State prison, you know, maximum security. There are murderers and rapists and felons who work in this tailor shop making clothes for a company that is a for-profit company called Corecraft.
When the guy who gives us promotions asked me, the shop supervisor, to make him a suit for graduation, and my best guy is inmate Sweat, who's been in that shop longer than I have, who do you think I'm going to be working with on this project? Inmate Sweat.
I definitely need to explain to me.
This movie sucks. I'm going for a walk.
And it's 40 or so of these inmates in a room with one civilian supervisor and one corrections officer. And they're working at sewing machines and they have to make quotas. And it's run like a business. And the civilian supervisor is in charge of making sure that all that happens. And she happens to be a woman in with these 40 men. And, you know, things happen in that environment. And she got involved with two of the inmates and helped them escape.
We're talking with Ben Stiller, director and executive producer of the Showtime series Escape at Donnemara. Tilly has said conflicting things about what she did, what she didn't do, and I think she's also said something critical about the series. So what is your take on her account of her own actions and what she's said about what you did?
Well, I did find her a really fascinating character because I couldn't quite tell what her motivation was, who she was, whether she was good or bad. I mean, she obviously did very bad things, but was she an evil person? I don't know. That's what was really interesting to me. And we talked with Patricia about it a lot. Patricia, I knew, would be focused on trying to find the humanity in her without trying to show her in any way as someone who should be likable necessarily. I think she wasn't making a judgment on the character. She just wanted to find the motivation for what she was doing and find out who she was for herself and then let the audience make their own judgment. And I think that's what I was hoping the story would show this person in this situation and the actions that they did. And some of them were really bad and some of them could have been, you could think, oh, well, maybe there's a motivation for why she did that. You know, she's unhappy in her life. She lives in this small town. She has a really tough job. All of a sudden, these guys are showing her affection. She made bad judgment calls, but, you know, you could understand why she might be drawn in. You know, as an audience, that's more interesting to watch and to allow the audience to make their own judgments and maybe confuse the audience a little bit.
Something that is often missing from prison escape movies is what got the people who are escaping in prison. And you show what got these two guys in prison, and you show it later. And you don't romanticize it, you don't sugarcoat it. What they do is horrific. So I want to ask you about why show it and why place it in the series where you did.
Well, I think it would have been irresponsible not to show it because there's no way that you can't somehow root for the protagonist of an escape story in a prison escape story because you want to, you know, you have to care about them on some level. But the reality is these guys are murderers and had done really bad things to get into prison. I think what was, for me, what was interesting about the culture at the prison was that they were in this cell block called the honor block where you got special privileges. You could watch television, they could cook there, and you know, favors were done, and you could put sheets up in front of your cell for privacy. And that honor block was a place that anybody in prison could get into if they were on good behavior. So it didn't matter if you were the worst murderer and you know, had done the most horrible crimes. If you were in good behavior in the prison, you could get on the honor block. So to me, that was interesting that these people, you only see them in that world. You don't know what they've done. And the prisoners don't really know what they've done before they've come in, too. So obviously their reputations and, you know, the stories. But for us as an audience, we don't know that. So I thought it was really important to show that. And then in terms of storytelling, we thought it would be interesting to hold that back so that once you have actually connected with these characters, you're then sort of reminded or really informed of what they did and why they're there.
I want to ask you a little bit more about research. You have this report, and then I think you also were able to talk with David Sweat, who was in prison, who was captured. Richard Matt was killed after he escaped. What was that conversation like, and what did that bring you, and what did that give Paul as an actor?
Paul Benicio and I went and sat with him for about 6 hours together, and he was, you know, a very, very cordial and very outgoing, and answered all the questions we had, and was very helpful. And sitting across from him, you know, he seemed like, oh, this guy's, you know, he's okay. And I think that to me is, again, you know, a lot of what this story is about. It's about human beings who have done really bad things. Does that mean that they are really bad people? Do your actions define who you are? I think they do to a certain extent. But also, as you're sitting across from a person, you can see, you know, a person there. So that to me was very helpful just to be able to see him as he is in prison now, because he also was a guy who had to sort of put up a front in prison that he felt wasn't who he really was to survive. You know, Richard Matt was probably much more of a cold-blooded killer. David Sweat shot a police officer when he was cornered, but he, you know, still in cold blood. So, but the way that Richard Matt, the crimes that he committed seem a lot more premeditated. I mean, David Sweat's going to be in prison for the rest of his life, pretty much in solitary confinement. He also, you know, he took someone else's life. So it's not for me to make that judgment call. All I can do is try to show this story. And what's fascinating to me is to see how human beings react in these situations and then, as an audience, grapple with those questions.
Coming up on The Frame, more of John Horne's conversation with Ben Stiller. Welcome back to The Frame. I'm Chloe Veltman, sitting in for John Horne. Let's get back now to John's interview with Ben Stiller. He has an Emmy nomination for directing Escape at Dannemora, a Showtime series based on a real prison escape that took place in 2015 in upstate New York. We pick it up with Ben Stiller talking about how he dealt with the difficult subject matter.
This isn't a story about, you know, a huge disaster that was covered up or exoneration of people who deserve to have their story told. This is about three people who did pretty bad things and really didn't get redeemed in any way and shouldn't necessarily be redeemed. And so, you know, what is it that's going to keep people watching? And to me, it was about the humanity and what we could see in ourselves in this story. And so that lent itself to a longer telling, because I think it would get reduced down in a movie form to just sort of the escape and then, you know, being chased and being caught.
When you think about the movies that you watched growing up, the prison escapes films, do you go back and watch them, or do you try to kind of clean your memory from them so that you don't fall into the same kind of cliches or ways of telling that story?
I mean, I definitely was aware of not wanting to do. I mean, that's why I kept on coming back to the reality of what happened, because I felt like, you know, there have been so many great prison stories. How can we make up something or do something better than it's been done before? We could do something different if it's based on the reality of what actually happened. And for me, those movies, I never was a huge prison escape genre fan, but I love those movies from the era that a lot of those films were made in, the 70s. So stylistically, I watched a bunch of them just to kind of see, like even Escape from Alcatraz.
I'm going to put with Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
I'm going to put that on very high on the list.
Yeah. No, it's great. And when you look at it, there's actually a lot of similarities in that story to what actually happened.
Dummy in the bed.
Yeah. And when you look at the dummy, how bad the dummy is. But these guys in reality at Clinton they did dummies in beds that were even worse, you know, but it worked.
The other thing that they did is they referenced to themselves the Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah, they got down to basically the outer wall of the prison after David Sweat, who was one of the inmates who escaped, found his way down there after weeks and weeks of searching and going down every night, between bed check and when they would wake up. And he got to the outer wall of the prison and they started sort of chipping away at it. And they joked with each other, him and Richard Matt, that this was like Shawshank Redemption. It's like, how long did it take in Shawshank Redemption? 20 years. It's going to take us 10. And we had that line in the show, and we shot it. And when I watched it, it was just too, it just seemed too self-referential or something. And I thought it took people out of it.
Even though it actually was said.
So that's like an example of couldn't use something that was real because it seemed almost phony or something.
You are casting not only actors to play these characters, you're casting the location. And the prison is as much a character in the story as are the actors. How did you and your production designer approach the challenge of getting the location? And what did that give you as a storyteller to actually be in that space and shooting where the escape actually happened?
Well, we went up there very early on, and when you go there and you see this place, which dominates the landscape, this huge prison in this very, very small town. It's really, the prison is bigger than the town. It's got this 30 or 40 foot wall that lines the main road. So you could just drive through the town, and the prison's on the right side. You just could drive west right through. You'd be through in like, I don't know, 3 minutes, you know? But this prison is basically the economy of the entire area. I mean, the prison's been there for over 100 years, so it's generational. And that place is really, I think, sort of the core of why all this happened, because these people are isolated there. It's the wintertime, and they both need and resent this place. So we needed to film there, and it's very hard to recreate an environment like that.
And what was the tipping point? Because obviously, the prison staff, I mean, it was I think in the Inspector General's report, a culture of carelessness. Inmates escaped and one of them was killed. The prison is never going to look that great, and yet you were able to get access. So how do you sell that you're going to do it faithfully, but, you know, it's not going to sugarcoat things?
Yeah, I mean, just by trying to be honest with people when we went up there, I think we were lucky enough to have Governor Cuomo get us access to the prison, and that really made a huge difference. And then when he did that, we went and we met at the prison, and we had a tour of the prison. We met with the superintendent, and I could tell at first they were a little reluctant about allowing us to come in there, and very understandably. And I just said to them and our team, you know, that came and said, look, we just want to portray this as faithfully as possible. And also tell us your side of the story. We want to hear. And the first thing that everybody would say is this person, you know, Joyce Mitchell is a bad apple. She doesn't represent what most of the people are like here. And I think the reality in a, you know, prison or in any prison situation is there are good and bad people who work there, and people who abuse the system. And obviously the system is very, very flawed. So we wanted to try to show as many sides of that within showing the story. And so the more feedback that I could get from people who worked there, we ended up having technical advisors who had worked at the prison who came on the set every day. And so we could ask them questions. We had inmate technical advisors who had served time at Clinton in the tailor shop, those scenes that we filmed. All of those inmates in the scenes were former inmates. About a third of them had actually been in the Clinton Correctional tailor shop. So I felt that we were being able to portray as close to reality as possible by having the people there who, you know, had experienced it.
Ben, thanks for coming in.
All right. Thanks, John.
And that's the show for this week. Thanks to the Frame team for having me these past few days. The show is produced by Oscar Garza, Darby Maloney, Jonathan Shiflett, Julia Paskin, and Robert Garova. The Frame's news clerk is Andrea Gutierrez, and the show's intern is Paul Ratliff. Valentino Rivera is the engineer. The opening theme music is by Taylor McFerrin. I'm Chloe Veltman from the Moan Broadcast Centre. Thanks for listening. John Horn is back here on Monday.